Totally Football Show as we turn from internationals back to club football, from Syria to Syria, from San Marino to Jose Mourinho, from Wales in Moldova to Wales at the Emirates. Yes, and as we wave that cheery, well-meaning middle finger to the qualifiers, there are big matches to preview as Man City host Liverpool, Man United visit the Potteries, and Everton take on Chelsea. We're going to be looking at it all in this Totally Football Show. Every day's a school day on the Totally Football Show. Michael Cox is here, James Horncastle, and David Priest as well. Michael, what you've learnt today is that you can have Wi-Fi on even when airplane mode is activated.
Yeah, I'm very excited by this. It means you can essentially eliminate any phone calls that anyone might want to reach you with, but you can still have WhatsApp on. It's fantastic.
James, how are you today?
Oh, fine and dandy, Jimbo.
Excellent. All right, looking forward to hearing you. You shy, reclusive type, you. Paul McIntosh says, I'm planning to save this one and listen to it while running the Great North Run on Sunday. Please say something motivational. Thank you and a little kiss. David, what can you say to Paul?
Watching kiss people spit on you as you come over the bridge.
That's positive.
That's valuable, actually. Have you done this route yourself?
Many moons ago, as a Sunderland apprentice, we were all made to do it the day after a game.
But was that why they were spitting at you? Because you were Sunderland?
Possibly, yeah. You nailed it there. Yeah,
there you go. Right.
So don't wear a Sunderland shirt.
Okay, yeah, no, that sounds very sound. Loads of questions, actually, for you, David, as usual. How about this one? Any memories, says Andy Hellier, of Pompey's shambolic pre-season tour to Gibraltar in 2012?
I've got lots of memories.
How bad did it get, David?
It got bad enough to get beat 4-0 by a Gibraltar side on a very first-generation plastic pitch.
Right, OK.
It wasn't so much as a shambles. We were all taken away to Gibraltar at the behest of a fan that lived there. And he paid for all the players to go over there. It was during the period when all of the big hitters were negotiating their release from the club. And there was a lot of us, about 13 mercenaries, just being rambled up from anywhere. And we all went over there and we ended up losing 4-0.
Right.
Which wasn't a great...
although it can happen. We saw Celtic.
Yeah. In all fairness, I only played the second half of that game when it was 2-0 at half-time.
All right. I kind of assumed that was some kind of off-field shenanigans, some kind of... high jinks in the hotel with motorbikes crashing into people's cups of tea and stuff.
No, we were all just there trying to get a job. That's what.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And I didn't get one.
Sorry about that, dude.
That's no problem.
All right. We'll move on. Especially because, fascinating though that is, there are a lot of people who are going to be even more interested to hear our thoughts about City, Man City that is, hosting Liverpool. It's the early fixture this weekend, and what an early fixture as the Premier League rolls back. It's a statement game, isn't it? It's a chance to put down a marker.
Yeah, I always get really excited about this week of Premier League football because it's after the international break. It feels like the season's just begun because the transfer window's over. And I think this is a really exciting fixture. Games between City and Liverpool have been very open and entertaining in the last few years. Last season, Liverpool got the better. There was a draw and then a 1-0 win at Anfield. And I'd make Liverpool slight favourites for this one. It's at City, but Liverpool have just been so impressive in the first few weeks of the season. That performance last time out against Arsenal. I expect Klopp will name an unchanged side. Maybe the goalkeeper could change. We don't really know what the situation there is. But City still seem disjointed and they still seem a little bit unsure of precisely how they're meant to be playing. And I think particularly in midfield, Liverpool could just overpower them.
Right. A lot of people wanting to get Cox on the Ox. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who that could be a regular feature, actually.
Yeah, just don't Google it.
Yeah. Oxlade-Chamberlain, as you know, joining Liverpool, keen to play in central midfield. Tom Green, how does Ox fit into Liverpool's first team? Is he headed for the bench? RCTI dad bod. How funny is it that Ox will almost certainly play right back? Russin Fuss. Can Klopp fix Ox? What do you think, Michael?
I find it very odd that he's so determined to play in central midfield because I'm not sure he's got the attributes to play there. He's, I wrote an article for ESPN last week after the transfer went through where I pointed out that Oxlade-Chamberlain played a lot of rugby as a as a teenager. He went to quite a posh school where they didn't do football, they just did rugby. And I always think he plays football in a very rugby way. He's essentially a ball carrier. He's not someone who plays penetrative passes or forward passes. He essentially gets the ball and storms into space and then kind of offloads it sideways. And I think actually the fact that there was a bit of a shift towards 3-4-3 in the Premier League last year kind of suited him. He suits being a wing-back. He's a player who gets up and down. And the fact that he turned down and moved to Chelsea supposedly because he wants to play in central midfield rather than out wide is slightly odd, especially when you consider that Liverpool have a lot of central midfield options. I mean, I'd be very surprised if Klopp disturbs that midfield trio that was so good against Arsenal. You've got Coutinho to come back. You've got Lallana to come back, I think, some point before Christmas. And then next year, you've got Naby Keita to come in. So, I mean, it's not unreasonable that Ox might end up being the seventh choice central midfielder for Liverpool. Wow. And Milner as well, who, you know, is a player who went there for the same reason, because he wanted to play centrally and is now filled in at left back and is now on the bench. So I find it a slightly odd move, personally.
That failed Oxlade-Chamberlain to Chelsea transfer, by the way. Fascinating detail coming out that supposedly the move fell through after he met with Conte, and as a result, Chelsea kept Conte out of the room when Ross Barkley was coming for a chat, because he just can't be trusted to talk to new signings. He's too scary or something. David, they're both fearsome going forward, these two clubs. They're both a little bit frail at the back as well. Can you win a title like that?
Yeah, you can't. I think it's a bit of a myth that, you know, defences win titles.
Oh.
There was a question, I think somebody asked a question before about will Man City stick with three at the back against Liverpool? I think they will. And for the simple reason that I think that you can defend against any number of players with three flat players. You know, if you go into training sessions and you play waves of attack against three players, doesn't matter how many players you put up against them, six, seven, eight, it's still, you should be able to defend anything if you defend the width of the posts with three players.
And so, the fact that Kyle Walker is back this weekend, that could be huge, no?
Yeah, exactly. I watched Spurs last time out against Burnley, and I didn't think they would miss him as much as what they did, especially playing at Wembley, in the open space of Wembley, and they had a lot of the ball, and they need to get forward and break forward quickly, and they just didn't have that.
I think it is big that Walker's back and perhaps plays in this game, because I don't know if you saw these stats this week from Opta that he was the quickest player in the Premier League, and when you're going up against Salah or Mane, I think you're going to need all of that pace. Both of those players perform really well for their countries in the international break. Salah scored, I think, the only goal that Egypt had against Uganda. And also we saw Sadio Mane score and assist a goal for Senegal. So both of those players carrying on their form in international football. And yeah, we'll have to see if they pick up where they left off against City as well.
I disagree slightly with David, not on the theoretical point, but I think City played back four against Bournemouth, and I think they looked a little bit more stable. I think if they play a three against Mane and Salah, I think if you expose Kompany in particular to Mane's pace, that could be really disastrous.
I think they'll be looking to isolate them, and also Otamendi. I think that they did that in the game last time at the Etihad, which was a 1-1 draw. But yeah, Guardiola always likes to attack in small spaces and defend in big spaces, and I think that kind of plays into this Liverpool front three's hands, because they love nothing more than big wide spaces to run in behind. So they have to be moderate, I think, their approach.
And also worth pointing out, it's a very different City side now under Guardiola. But Liverpool's best performance, I think, under Klopp was at the Etihad a couple of seasons ago when they won 4-1. And Firmino was just fantastic in that game with his movement against Kompany in particular. So I think Liverpool could really put on a show here.
I think they both look awesome going forward, because obviously Man City got oodles of talent, even though they don't have Raheem Sterling, who's been the man who's saved them with late goals in the previous two fixtures. But they've both got issues at the back, and I wonder if Liverpool's issues at the back are just slightly bigger than what City's are.
Well, I think they will bring Mignolet back, seeing as the back playing competitive games again. So there goes the wish for a positive Arsenal approach from this podcast from one of the listeners. No, but it's I couldn't see the thinking behind it. To be
bringing Karius in.
Yeah, the only reason why I thought he'd come in is because he's going to use him if he uses him in the Champions League, then he's going to need to give him a game beforehand. That's right. The only reason. Otherwise, I think you're upsetting the apple cart for no reason.
Is Karius going to be coming in for the clash next week against Sevilla then, do you think?
Well, that's what the rumours are. So it's then it makes sense that they give him one game before he goes into the European campaign. But to upset Mignolet like that, when he is actually, he's come back into form and he does look a different keeper since he's come back in from being dropped the first time round.
Also, where does Coutinho, you say Klopp won't break up that midfield three, but what's he going to do about Coutinho?
Well, I don't think Coutinho will play this weekend, but I think if he's going to find a regular place in the team, it will be in midfield. That's where he started to play the back end of last season. It's where he played in
pre-season. So a deeper role than before?
Yeah, I mean, I never thought he was a particularly good left-sided... No, I never thought he was particularly suited to the left-sided midfield. I think Coutinho is a slightly different player to what people think. He's quite scrappy. He gets stuck in. He's quite good physically for a small guy. And I think his long-range passing, his through balls are very good from a deeper position. So I'd expect that eventually he will play instead of Emre Can and Wijnaldum will move right. But whether you necessarily need that in this game, I'm not sure. I think you want quite a physical midfield and just to play on the counter-attack. So I think Coutinho will be more helpful in those kind of home games against defensive sides where they need him to unlock the door.
So many fresh young players coming through for Liverpool. James, where are they for City?
Well, Jadon Sancho, who left City to go to Borussia Dortmund, might make his debut this weekend when Dortmund play against Freiburg. He was England's superstar at the under-17 Euros. I think City have spent so much money on their campus supposedly bringing through these young players. And in Liverpool, their opponents this week, you see actually someone who is bringing through talent, like Woodburn, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, look, Liverpool don't have the depth that City have, which might facilitate those youngsters getting more game time at Anfield than their counterparts at the Etihad do. But it's a better look for Klopp than it is for Guardiola in that sense. And these two players can come off the bench and really affect the game for them, I think.
Michael's calling this for Liverpool. What do you think, James?
I'm going to call this for Liverpool as well.
Really?
Yeah.
David Priest?
They're a decent price as well for the win. So I'd put a bit, if I was going to put some money on it. If I was a better man, I'd take them.
Listeners, like a stat, have a go on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Now, Man United are top. Next team to try and slow them are Stoke at the notoriously difficult erstwhile Britannia Stadium, where Man United have not won in four visits. All right, can they stop them this time, David Priest?
No, I think they've got a different look about them this time, Manchester United. I think they've... you just see the way that they've... Of course, everyone say that they haven't played anybody yet. And then still, after they've played Stoke, will they have played anybody? I don't think so.
I don't know, because Stoke beat Arsenal, didn't they?
I mean, I thought Arsenal quite unlucky to lose that game, to be honest. They got the win, but I'm not sure it necessarily points to the fact that they'll cause United problems this weekend.
Right. Wimmer and Kurt Zouma at the back?
Yeah,
possibly.
The women and prayer.
Yeah, I hope Zouma is okay physically. I mean, he was a very good player at Chelsea. I think there's some suspicion at Chelsea that this has been a really quite serious really serious injury. He might not be the same player he was. So I hope he has a good season at Stoke, because he was a good player and he's kind of suited to Chelsea's back three as well. So, there must be a reason they loaned him out, considering that Conte doesn't have that many options at the back.
All right. Is the fact that what we used to call Britannia is now rebranded Bet365 and home to a middling outfit that depends on imports for success, is that in any way a metaphor for something?
Very nice, yeah.
Right, Man United have got Basel coming up on Tuesday. But, David, you don't see this fixture posing too many problems for them. Are you guys in agreement with that? Anything you think the Potters might, spanners they might throw into the Mourinho's works?
Well, I think that Basel game actually plays into Mourinho's hands, because it makes his selection easier. Because I think both Jones and Eric Bailly are suspended for that Basel game, so I don't think we're going to see any change at the back or any kind of rotation. I think he'll stick with the team that has served him so well so far. Still yet to see Lindelof, for example. He was out of the squad last time. I think people in Sweden are a little bit concerned about that, particularly the first game that they had in these qualifiers. Bulgaria, I think he had quite a shaky game in that and then did better against Belarus. I think in terms of Stoke, I think what helped them when United went to the Britannia or the Football 365, whatever you want to call it, last time was that United didn't have any pace in the side. I think one of the changes we've seen this season is Mourinho's always tried to have at least one of Rashford or Martial in the team. If United were to deviate from that, then Stoke might have a better chance of keeping United quiet.
We'll see. But not a big chance.
No. I think United, they love to play on the counter attack. I think this should suit them. Although last time around, they only got a point because of a player who's no longer there, which was Wayne Rooney, who got his 250th goal. That free kick.
Did you call him Wayne Rooney?
Yeah, I have a real problem with my my W's and my R's. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a bit wussy
in that
way.
Don't know your R's from your W's.
No. Yeah.
Right. Okay, Michael, here's a question which you can deign to answer or not. I don't know if it's interesting. Yep. But the stats indicate that Man United only really start scoring, even though they've scored loads of goals, they only really start scoring this season when Fellaini comes on the field. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting pattern. I'm not sure it's because of Fellaini, but I think it is because Fellaini's come on about 70 minutes and they've been very good in the last 20 minutes. And I think the reason for that is, as James says, they're very good on the counter-attack. Mm. And they, you know, they're going to be at their best when they go 1-0 up and other teams come onto them and they can break very quickly. But his subs have been very good, Mourinho, so far this season.
Speaking of breaking very quickly, let's look at Arsenal's campaign. They're home to Bournemouth this weekend. The bottom three visiting, they could be in the bottom three by the end of this weekend, David. What about the mood at Arsenal? They've lost their last two. They were dismantled, I think, on a moral and physical level by Liverpool in their last fixture in the Premier League. And now here comes Sanchez in tears. Did you see Sanchez's comments?
No, I didn't.
This was after his miserable time away with Chile.
He's accused of being fat by one of his ex-coaches?
Well, yeah, they did say that his condition wasn't the best.
Fat
yeah.
with muscle.
Is that right?
I mean, he's always in a super ripped mode, even by athletic standards.
Well, they weren't so sure about that at Chile. Chile, of course, slipping in the last week from fourth place and on line for a place in Russia to sixth, where they wouldn't even get that playoff with New Zealand.
No.
Yeah. And they've got two big matches coming up. They haven't scored, I believe, in four matches now. Mm. It's a bit of worrying. Anyway, so Sanchez, after the second of those games, he publishes things that you get tired of being criticised with reason and without reason. You get tired of those who want you to lose. You get tired of saying to yourself, I'll get up again, after crying after a defeat. You get tired of telling the world and the people who are with you that everything is going well. And the worst is that no one ever realises how that makes you feel. My goodness. First of all, he wrote this on his Instagram. I'm obviously using Instagram wrong. I thought it was for like your holiday snaps and stuff. Not kind of cries for help. But this, I mean, that, all joking aside, the guy's really suffering.
Mm. Well, I think he thought that he would no longer be an Arsenal player right now. I think Arsene Wenger is going to have a really hard time reintegrating him because I think his head is elsewhere. And Arsene Wenger might claim it as a victory to have not have sold him, unlike what they've done in previous years, and let loads of players go to Manchester. But I think they've hurt themselves as well, because I don't think Sanchez is going to be in the right frame of mind to be as effective for them as he has in the past. And they're not going to get the same kind of money that they could have got from him this summer, either in January or next summer.
Mm. What do you think about his impact, or the impact on his morale and his impact on their morale, David?
What, on his teammates?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't think it would make much of a difference at all. I think in a dressing room environment, when you've got a situation like that, that if they're popular in the dressing room, then it won't make a difference. If they're unpopular in the dressing room, then it's Wenger would have seen that, and he would have. I think he would have made a change. He would have let him go.
But he's hardly going to give him a lift.
No, not at all. But I mean, perhaps it's different at the very top. And, of course, you want the best players to be in your squad to give you a best chance of winning games. But if it's going to be a move that's beneficial for you, if you're going to go to a club that's going to win things, if you think of the morale that's in that dressing room now, they're probably all thinking, we're never going to win anything now. or we're not going to win a major trophy like a Champions League or a Premier League. So there might be a few of them sitting there saying, well, good luck to him. I hope he does get there. I wish it was me that was going to a club like Manchester City.
And after November, he might not have a World Cup to play for, you know, which has been used for players like Coutinho, why they would end their strike and start playing for the team again. So.
All right. Well, it does sound like this might be a very good time for a visiting club to be coming to the Emirates. That's what Bournemouth are doing. They've lost all three games so far, admittedly. They've only scored one goal. But they only narrowly were beaten by Manchester City last time out, Michael.
Yeah, they played quite well in that game. They changed the system, went to a back three, which was intended to match City's system, but then City played a back four. They competed well in midfield. It was the first time they played all three of Arta and Sermon and Gosling. I think Bournemouth are much better when they've got three in the centre. It just feels natural. It's the way they've played for the last couple of years. Those three have a very good relationship. There's a nice balance to the side. I think they'll need those three to compete against Arsenal. I wouldn't be surprised if they had a lot of the ball here. Arsenal haven't been particularly good in midfield. We saw against Liverpool how kind of disjointed they were. I just don't really trust Bournemouth defensively, both in open play and at set pieces. I think there's so much emphasis upon the fullbacks going forward that they leave a lot of gaps between the defenders. We saw that with the goal they conceded to Gabriel Jesus in the last game. Hmm. And also at set pieces, they're not a particularly tall side. They don't look very well organised. I think it's probably quite a good fixture for Arsenal to have at this point. It reminds me a little bit, I might be wrong, I think after the 8-2 against Manchester United in 2011, Arsenal's next game was at home to Swansea, who'd just been promoted, and were, a little bit like a Bournemouth. I know Bournemouth have been around for a couple of years, but they play a similar style of football, and Arsenal could just impose themselves on the game, and it was the kind of game Arsenal wanted. And I think, at home to the Emirates against a team who likes playing, quote, Arsenal football, probably suits them.
Will Wenger stick with his three at the back? Will he stick with Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey in the midfield?
Well, there's lots of question marks here. I mean, I think he'll move to a back four, partly because Oxlade-Chamberlain's moved on and he was the most suited player to wing back. I mean, Bellerin playing left wing back didn't seem to make sense to me. And after just the poor defensive performance, I think Wenger will probably go to back four. Bellerin back to right back, Monreal to left back. Midfield, I think, is the interesting thing. Ramsey, obviously his positional sense against Liverpool is completely lacking. And I think it was interesting that he was substituted at half-time. I think there was... Wenger supposedly said he had an injury. I wouldn't be surprised if Wenger had just realised what was happening and decided to change things. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ramsey didn't play here. I'd quite like Wenger to play two holding midfielders. Xhaka is a very good player, I think, but he can't be left on his own like that. I'd like to see him alongside Elneny, possibly, who's very comfortable.
You make him sound like a toddler in the city centre.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to see Elneny, maybe even Coquelin. I think Elneny's a better player on the ball, but I think Arsenal need to protect that defence.
Right.
You can't just blame the back four, the back three. It's about how you protect them.
Mm. Well, that's fair. If they lose this, David, or if they don't get a win, things get really interesting because they've got Cologne next in that Europa League and then they're away at Chelsea next weekend.
It's a great one if you're a vulture to go and watch, to see what happens. That's why I'm going to go and watch it.
Are you going to go?
Yeah, I'm going to go and watch it. Just simply because of what happened at the start of the season they've had, and Michael's probably right that this is probably the best game they could possibly have at this moment in time, but it would be great if they did draw or lose.
Well, obviously not for them, David.
No.
But it would be interesting from a kind of...
Yeah, exactly. You know. And we were talking before about Wenger, that there'd be no chance Wenger would go. And of course, he won't go. But still, it's
you've kicked on a bit here. So we're onto Wenger leaving, you think?
No, it was a question that was brought up earlier on. Who's the least likely to
be sacked?
To be sacked this season.
Least likely?
Yeah.
And who was it?
Well, I put Wenger, just because he's been the least likely.
Who's going to sack him?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, all right. And it is a good fixture to go along to when you look at what happened last year. Last year you had the 3-1 at the Emirates and that remarkable 3-3 game down at the Vitality, where I think Bournemouth were 3-0 up, were they not, before allowing Arsenal back into it.
When Giroud did his scorpion kick celebration. Yeah. Not the scorpion kick.
Oh, was that the previous
celebration? Yeah,
yeah,
scorpion kick was against Palace. And then there was the funny sight of him doing a scorpion kick while his teammates were getting the ball out of the net and saying, actually, we can win this game. We're only getting a point here.
Oh, bless. Now, shall we move on? West Ham got their first home game of this season. Could be an interesting atmosphere. I read of protests planned at the London Stadium as West Ham take on Huddersfield, who are all the way up in third. Who's going to finish higher this season?
Huddersfield.
Huddersfield.
Seems to be consensus on that, David.
Well, from the start of that, I think Huddersfield, yeah.
All right. Michael Lunt goes so far as to ask, would Huddersfield qualifying for Europe be more incredible than Leicester winning the league?
No.
Why?
Just to win the league is, I mean, you have to get about 35 points more than you do to qualify for Europe.
Right.
That would be an incredible achievement, don't get me wrong, especially where they've come from, you know, first season up. But no, I mean, nothing will beat Leicester winning the league.
All right. They've had 3 clean sheets so far. Can they go 4 against a West Ham side that's got all sorts of injury worries? Lanzini out, probably. Andre Ayew suffered a thigh injury playing for Ghana. Edmilson Fernandez hurt his ankle playing for Switzerland's under-21s. Yeah. How significant is that, James Horncastle?
I think if they were all fit, it wouldn't matter because West Ham don't really have a coach and Huddersfield do.
Oh, really? That you'd put it that strongly?
Yeah.
Arnautovic, of course, another name that'll be absent, but for ongoing suspension reasons. Bilic, since he took over, interesting to add this, courtesy of producer Ben, they've conceded 3 goals or more 18 times.
There's some another injury problem. There's some bruised egos in the boardroom, I think, after their run in with Sporting Lisbon.
Oh, no. What has Sporting Lisbon said now? Oh, dear.
Well, I think West Ham are taking legal action, aren't they, for libel?
Supposedly, yeah.
But if I was a West Ham fan and I were holding a protest, I know what I would take along with me.
A deadline.
Something's something stimulating.
Yes.
Yeah.
But everyone thought that the assumption was that they had a good transfer window and all the signs they made, and it was like, well, they've signed good players in people's eyes, but was there any thought to it?
I mean, have they scouted Joe? I don't want to go back to this, but have they scouted Joe Hart at all in last season? I mean, I don't understand why you would go for Hart after the year that you've had at Torino.
David, do you think he's getting worse?
I think, well, last weekend, I think it was a perfect time to introduce somebody else as the number one. Especially
for England?
Yeah, it was made easier by Pickford's withdrawal, and I think it would have been a great time, because especially with a year leading up to Russia, we don't want to be this question still hanging over the top of Hart when it comes up to the friendly games beforehand, and then all of a sudden we think, well, we need to choose Butland. It's not going to get any better for him this season. Defensively, the people in front of him aren't going to be performing any better, and I think the goal against Slovakia, I got a lot of criticism before criticising him simply because people saying that it's heart bashing, and that I was just indiscriminately criticising him. But it's not. It was either, you know, he was caught between 2 decisions. He did neither rush out to block the shot. He didn't stay in his line to react to the shot. He come in half-heartedly in between. And okay, it's early in the game, but it's at that level you have to be ready from the very first second. And it just seemed like he wasn't.
Fair enough. All right. Do you see Huddersfield getting the result this weekend at London Stadium?
Yeah, they just seem a really good, organised, compact team. And like James says, West Ham have got better individuals than Huddersfield. There's no doubt about that, but they don't seem to have a plan. And I think that is going to be exposed again over the coming weeks. And I'd back Huddersfield.
Okay. Brighton, meanwhile, are up against West Brom. Brighton have failed to find the net so far this season. West Brom, thus, not the ideal opponents. Because they've only conceded 1 goal in 3 matches so far. Things so bad for Brighton that they actually tried to sign Vincent Janssen during the transfer
window.
That's
quite interesting because Holland's game against Bulgaria, I think Janssen was up front for that. And just behind him in a new position was Davy Proper, who, of course, is a Brighton signing. And he scored twice. And he was playing further forward than he usually does because I think he came in for Schneider, who'd had a terrible game against France. And was man of the match and gave a really encouraging display. So I don't know whether that's something that they might consider, playing him a little bit further forward, closer to goal. Because that might be another way where they can actually find some goals.
Absolutely. So. They also brought in at the other end Tim Krul. Are you a fan, David?
I am, yeah. But I mean, I don't know how there was a big injury there to his cruciate, and I don't know how he's reacted since he's come back, really. Before that, I think he was Newcastle's best keeper. And there was a lot of debate about that. But Newcastle still don't have a keeper as good as Tim Krul, I don't think.
Right. And the other signing I wanted to ask about, Ezequiel Scalotto, former Atalanta, Inter, and Brighton picking him up from Sporting Lisbon. Defender, do you rate him still?
I don't rate him as highly as he rates restaurants, because this is what he does in his spare time. He loves going on TripAdvisor and writing restaurant reviews. But apparently he'd had a very good year under Jorge Jesus at Sporting, and believes that he can kind of get into the Argentina squad.
Really?
Even though he was briefly capped for Italy against England. But yeah, he's very quick. I think, yeah, they probably believe that that will serve him well in this league, where, of course, speed and intensity and physicality is everything.
Right. I'm all for people doing reviews in their spare time.
Yes.
By the way. Right. OK. There's loads more games to go. What do you want to talk about next, Michael?
No, is it just worth mentioning West Brom's signing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we may well have done in previous pods, but in case you weren't paying attention, listeners, they include the likes of Oliver Burke from RB Leipzig, Krakowiak from somewhere. Where did he come from?
PSG.
Thank you. Oh, Kieran Gibbs out of Arsenal, and Hagazi from...
Yeah, who's been one of the revelations of the season so far, hasn't he?
Although he didn't do quite so well last time. His error, partial error, leading to Crouch's equaliser.
I think Hegazi's start to the season before that game led some fans to think, maybe it's not such a disaster if we sell Johnny Evans, which they haven't done. And Johnny Evans perhaps will come back for this
Johnny
game.
Evans, who's been one of the outstanding players in the World Cup qualifiers, we'll touch on his defensive record, which is quite remarkable with Northern Ireland, later on. All right, well, that's Brighton against West Brom, looking for their first points. While on Saturday afternoon, the last two champions of the Premier League, David, face each other at the King Power Stadium, Leicester and Chelsea.
Yeah, and the ongoing saga with Adrian Silva. That's it could have a big effect on Leicester's season. So
all right, so talk us through this. Adrian Silva.
Well, yeah. First of all, Danny Drinkwater obviously put a transfer request in to get his move to Chelsea. Okay, so they make the moves to sign Adrian Silva. As it turns out, their registration was submitted 14 seconds too late, which you would think they were probably, or Leicester were thinking, it doesn't matter, it's only 14 seconds. Apparently not.
Rules are rules.
Yeah, FIFA are a stickler for rules, as we know. They're without the centre midfielder now, and Danny Drinkwater, he will be a big miss for them. And no replacement. And I know somebody, I can't remember who it was, somebody said that it could end up costing Shakespeare his job. I don't think it'll go that far, but it'll be a big hit for them, should this not happen. And it doesn't look likely, I don't think.
Leicester asking the FA support in trying to get FIFA to turn a blind eye to that 14 seconds. It does seem extraordinary that at the end of months of transfer window, you would miss the deadline by 14 seconds. But so often it comes down just to plain old human error. Johnny Blaine, who I mentioned from time, great with stats, remarkably enough. Do you remember when Arshavin went to Arsenal? Mm-hmm. So this was a deal that had been, it went on for months, trying to get this all sorted out. It was the January transfer window. Anyway, it was finally sorted out on the last day of the transfer window, and they got all the paperwork, and it was given to Johnny to send. And then they did all in time for the 11 o'clock transfer deadline. 11:30, checks the fax. He wrote, he never pressed send. Never pressed send. So he had to go and... I can't remember who the
Is
agent
that what
was.
What happens with all of Arsenal's transfers? Is
that possibly. Possibly. So he was fired, not surprisingly.
Yeah.
But luckily for Arsenal, there was... I don't know if you remember, there was a massive snow in London at that period. And as a result, FIFA granted all parties an extra day to complete the deals. And so Arshavin was able to go through and have that remarkably consistent...
It's not as simple
at Arsenal.
It's not as simple as just people turning up, having a medical, and signing, and everything being agreed very quickly. I had a friend who's transferred in this window in the last year. It was an international transfer, and he had to fly to Manchester, then drive 2 hours to a city, have the medical, then drive to the embassy of the country where he came from to sign papers. And even then, he's still negotiating money that he's owed from the club. That was deferred before. So it was, in all space these hours, you think you just got to show up for a medical when there's a hell of a lot behind the scenes that goes on to stop it.
So Leicester, without Adrian Silva for the moment, who's a little bit in limbo as far as Sporting are concerned, he's now a Leicester player, hosting a Chelsea team that also, apart from Drinkwater, will feature N'Golo Kante, one would imagine. Diego Costa on the way back, apparently. The suggestions are that he's going to turn up again. but not in this match. Hazard will be back available. Which Hazard?
Kylian or Eden?
Oh, they've got two on their books now.
They signed Kylian from Újpest in Hungary.
Okay.
Perhaps as a ploy to keep Eden a little bit longer at the club. But you know what? I judge Chelsea's transfer window as being quite good now.
Do you?
Yeah, I think they've signed all fairly solid players, some good players, like Morata, for example. Davide Zappacosta, we saw come on for Italy in midweek and change the game for them, help them win against Israel, which I think was encouraging for Chelsea fans to see. You've got the possibility of Drinkwater reuniting with Kante. I also think, you know, when you look back at Leicester's title-winning season, one of the kind of ways that they used to get behind defences was Drinkwater would always play those balls over the top for Vardy to run onto. That's something that Morata used to love Pirlo doing. Now, I'm not comparing Pirlo to Drinkwater, but it was a particular ploy that I think worked really well, and I think it's something that they could maybe look to do at certain stages this season.
Do you think Drinkwater goes into the side for this game?
I'm not so sure. I don't know. I mean, I would expect it would be Cesc and Kante. Yeah, I think it's probably too soon. Too soon, but yeah, I think, I mean, as I said, there are two players that they've signed on deadline day who could really help Morata. Because I think Zappacosta, he's okay. He's perfectly decent. I wouldn't say he's anything more than that, but he's a very good crosser of the ball, and Morata's a very good header of the ball. So, yeah, I think, again, put them together and boom, there you go. Look,
it's, you know, you're saying about Drinkwater there and comparing it to Pirlo. It's an exaggeration. But from the first moment I saw him play, he looked like Paul Scholes to me when I saw him spraying balls out wide. He came on loan to Barnsley before he's moved to Leicester. And actually, it was the game against, I think he scored against Leicester. We won 2-0. And they put a bid in for him the next day. Yeah, so it was off the back of them. I mean, I don't know whether they'd been scouting him before that, but certainly his two performances against Leicester probably won him the move there.
Right.
And when he hits that ball out wide, he's got no back lift. It's very reminiscent of Paul Scholes. And he's a front foot footballer as well. You know, Kante gets a lot of praise for you know, the way that he closes people down, and he's always on the front foot. But Danny Drinkwater is exactly the same. He's great at nicking the ball and starting off attacks as well.
Well, speaking of Drinkwater, let's have a little pause, and then we'll be back with Everton Spurs. Woof.
Tweet us at The Totally Show and find us on Facebook and at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Right. There are other games in the Premier League this weekend. Burnley taking on Palace, in which apparently Frank de Boer has the sword of Damocles, or as Football 365 put it, the sword of Big Samocles hanging over his head. Podsy says, will De Boer change his tactics for the game against Burnley? Was he this inflexible at Inter?
No, he was very flexible. I mean, he was almost too flexible in that he changed too often.
Right.
For example, I mean, the 12 days he had of pre-season with them, he spent playing 4-3-3, and then at the last minute he thought, oh, let's play 3-5-2 against Kiev, and they lost the opening game of the season. So it was almost like he was second-guessing himself all the time. I think I just don't know why Palace appointed him in the first place. I know that Paris said that Palace had a real difficult time breaking teams down at home.
Mm.
It's like they're trying to be something that they're not. And when they've only signed one player, actually two on a permanent basis, Jairo, Riederwald and Mamadou Sakho, they haven't brought in the players that can help De Boer change it. So
Sakho's signing again during the transfer window, which should be a big boost to them, and they'll need it because Burnley have got a terrific record against Palace, won both of these last season. Roy Hodgson, a name being mentioned as a potential replacement should they need one.
Which, again, there's no joined-up thinking there, because it's like if you want to commit to this star that you want to implement, then why are you going for Roy Hodgson? I mean, they're not...
Well, presumably if they want to make the changes because they don't want to commit to this star.
Well, they should just... It goes that they've made the mistake here rather than De Boer.
Yeah, the person culpable is whoever appointed De Boer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't buy into the fact that it's because they've had two sort of managers beforehand that have sort of anti what Frank de Boer is. I think that it just needs more time for them to to change into to his way of thinking. I think it's a big drawback for managers coming from Ajax, that they're ingrained in so ingrained into one system that when it comes to moving into another one or another environment, then it holds them back because it's simply, well, they can't.
How long would you give him? How long would be fair, David, before you would draw a conclusion?
I think long enough until it becomes a real danger. And I mean, sort of when points the point gap starts opening up.
When the fun stops, stop.
Stop, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Saints taking on Watford. They are. We'll maybe talk more about that on Monday after they've played it.
Well,
Swansea, what, James?
No, I was just going to say Saints have, I think, failed to score in three of their four games, and Watford have kept clean sheets in back-to-back games.
All right. So. Swansea are up against Newcastle. Ooh, Liberty Crowe getting their first look at Renato Sanchez. That is going to be a fascinating. Newcastle with Mitrovic suspended. Could be a good game this, you think, with Wilfred Boney back as well. Had such a terrific record at the Liberty. David, you... tough one, that, for Rafa.
It is, yeah, and it's going to be a tough all season for him.
Right.
I don't think the rumours are any about him staying in at Newcastle or about him leaving. I think they're not going to go away at all. This team, when he first took over, I thought within 18 months he'd have them up and he'd have them in the top half of the season, top half of the table, sorry.
Hmm.
And I just don't know for the life of me why they haven't backed him. They will not find a better manager or have a better manager in the very, in the next 10 years than Rafa Benitez.
Really?
At least. Well, they won't. And he was ideal to go in there. And if they just backed him with what he wanted, he could give the fans what they wanted. And the fact that they haven't, and the fact that they've up, well, he seems so irked by it. It just baffles me.
The suggestion has been that it's because Mike Ashley is preparing to make a sale of the club, and that's why he hasn't made any investments.
Been preparing that for quite some time now. But I don't think Rafa will be there this weekend. Yeah, he's had to have a hernia operation.
Oh, really?
He's been in quite a lot of discomfort, I think. Mm. So I think it looks like his assistant, Mikel Antia, will be on the sidelines.
All those games are taking place, and so is Everton against Spurs. Let's see. Wayne Rooney dealing with a little bit of fallout. Hasn't he already been through that? It's a hair joke. All right. They're both coming off poor showings. Spurs had that 1-1 at home to Burnley, at home in inverted commas. Everton beaten 2-0 by Chelsea last time. But I was looking at the way these two teams line up, and I noticed, Michael, that it's not August and this isn't Wembley.
Yeah, I don't think Harry Kane's been doing too much wrong. He's hit the woodwork. I think he looked lively in the last game. Looked lively for England. I'm not really sure what this August curse is all about, but I don't think there's too much in that. I think he's been playing well.
Well, there plainly is, Michael.
Well.
But anyway, it's no longer August.
And anyway, they've got Christian Eriksen, who's just in magnificent form at the moment. At the international break, scored a great free kick, scored another screamer. More assists than any other player in Europe's top five leagues in 2017.
Really? More than even David Silva?
Yeah, that's right. Do you like him more than David Silva, Jimbo?
I'm not sure. They've both got questionable hair choices, I would say.
Silver also scored a free kick in
didn't
midweek.
He?
Wonderful. But
then everybody scored in that game.
Yes.
8-0 Spain against Liechtenstein, no?
Yeah.
I think actually it'll give it, playing at Goodison Park, I think it'll give Spurs a lift.
Yeah?
Yeah, after seeing them last weekend, it was...
Are you saying that playing away from Wembley might be better for them, David?
It's going to... It just does not suit them. It's you know, when you think of all, you look at the FA Cup finals that you look forward to, and then they're just drab affairs, just slow passing. That's exactly what they've been pulled into. They've been drawn into that. Even Eriksen, I mean, he's in fine form. I suppose the worst I've seen Christian Eriksen play for a long time, simply because he was trying balls from the centre of midfield that weren't on.
Which game was this, sorry?
Against Burnley.
Oh, right, yeah.
And when they got around the edge of the box, they were electing to shoot when it just wasn't on, and it made Burnley easy for them to defend.
Mm.
And I think that it going away, especially a place like Goodison Park where the pitch is a little bit tighter, I think it'll suit their game much more.
I'm interested to see what Ronald Koeman does in terms of his team selection. I think a frequent criticism of Everton this season, and rightly so, has been their lack of pace. And I think against a really high Spurs defensive line, you need someone going in behind. So I'd really like to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin start, who I think was excellent in that game against City. Without him, Everton seems so one-paced. And I think against such a young and energetic Tottenham side, they could be really just outsped? That's not a good... That's
no, no. Outpaced?
Outpaced, that's what I mean. Outpaced. Yeah, outpaced. That is a word.
What do you know about Nikolai Vlasic, who's joined Everton, having featured at Goodison barely a month ago in the Europa League qualifiers?
Yeah, I do wonder about that signing. It does just seem a little bit like they were keen to spend some money and, oh, he played very well against us, so let's get him in. But he looks direct. He's a winger who clearly likes dribbling towards goal. Maybe provides a little bit of that speed they're lacking, but I'd be surprised if he played a significant part in Everton's game over the next couple of months. I think we might see
Sandro Ramirez play in this game, who's been kept out with a heel injury. I think he obviously wasn't called up for international duty. He's kind of made it his focus to get back and ready for this game. Someone who's got very good movement. So, again, another option for Koeman to have.
Bingo. What proportion of signings are made by clubs? Not because of scouting, but just because somebody does well against them. Ronaldo, famously, that's how he went to Man United. You were mentioning Drinkwater from Barnsley to Leicester and Vlasic here.
Happens a lot more with managers, actually.
Oh, really?
I mean, if you think about when Liverpool appointed Rafael Benitez, that was partly because his Valencia side had completely outplayed them. And a few years later, when Liverpool were pretty pedestrian under Kenny Dalglish, remember Brendan Rodgers' Swansea side getting applauded off at Anfield, and I think that probably stuck in the owner's mind and probably contributed to his appointment.
Very nice point. All right, well, we've pretty much done our preview of the Premier League. In fact, we have. But still to come, we've got a quick roundup, a recap of the situation after the latest round of international qualifiers for Russia 2018, and also, after this, your questions.
What do you think of that section then? Pretty good, yeah? Not nearly enough Football League though. I keep trying to squeeze it in, but for some reason Jimbo and everyone else just prefer to talk about poor old Arsenal and the problems at Barcelona. Well, I don't know about you, but I've had enough. So I'm starting my own show, the Totally Football League Show. It'll be a bit like this one, but it'll be all about the stories, because that's what the Football League's about, stories. Uplifting ones like Burton Albion and Forest Green and Lincoln City. And less uplifting ones, like Sunderland. We'll be sending our man Matt Stanger up and down the country to get in amongst it with the fans and the players and the managers. And if he survives, he'll be joining me in the studio every week with a special guest to report back on his adventures. It's the Totally Football League Show. Totally Football League, totally free and available absolutely everywhere from Tuesday, September 19th.
Drew Wade says, hi James, re Isco's alleged buyout clause, €700 million they say, if it's set so high as a deterrent, why not just have no buyout clause? I don't get it. Legally in Spain you have to have, every contract has a buyout clause, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Producer Ben wants to know, David, if being a third choice keeper is the easiest job in football.
It is, yes, basically. There's a fascination with me simply because for half of my career I played, for a quarter of my career I was on the bench and a quarter of the career I was injured. But that quarter when I was on the bench towards the end, especially towards the end, it was probably the most enjoyable of my career.
Okay.
As well. The 3 years I was at Barnsley, being number two to somebody who I became good friends with, and kind of we formed a bit of a team, myself and Luke Steele, who just signed for Bristol City. We sort of bounced off each other and sort of like... I like to think that I made him play better, and the fact that I push myself more in training every day, it just became a more enjoyable time in my career for me. Mm. But I think that there's sort of like four, well, maybe not third choice, but second choices, there's four categories you know you put them under. You put them under sort of like a young keeper coming through who's glad to be there. You've got the competitive number two, someone like Romero at United. You've got the Stuart Taylors and the Richard Wrights. Who make it a vocation, really.
Right.
And then you've got the other one, like the curious ones like Begovic when he went to Chelsea. And now I can see why he would go there, because he'd take the chance. If you want to play Champions League and you want to go there as a second choice keeper, you'll take the chance that the keeper above you will get injured.
Right.
That's the chance he took. It didn't work out for him. He's went to Bournemouth. Mm. But there's four sort of categories of second choice keepers there. But you're right, third choice at a big club, that was the dream.
That would suit me, certainly. Of course, you never know, because sometimes a long-term backup after years of occasional appearances will get a regular weekly starting job. It does... does happen sometimes. Mark Ridley wants to talk about the World Cup qualifier between South Africa and Senegal, which is going to be replayed. Did you know this? It's going to be replayed. They had this game, when was this? This was in November last year, a 2-1 win for South Africa, but a penalty that was awarded by Ghanaian referee Joseph Lamptey was subsequently, it came up, they did an investigation for match manipulation. I was just using my words a little bit carefully there. So FIFA have given the go-ahead for the game to go ahead. Mark Ridley actually saying, which match would you like to be replayed? Michael.
I always think an early red card in a showpiece game is a shame.
Okay.
So I think that Arsenal-Barcelona game in 2006, just because I think the red card affected both teams. Arsenal didn't play at their best because they were down to 10, but they also sat very deep, which meant we didn't see Barcelona's best football. So that was a bit of a disappointment because that could have been a real all-time great game, and I don't think it was.
That's a great answer. How about this one? Ross says, some of the international football was poor this weekend. Would a team like Everton win the World Cup?
Ooh, no,
David's frowning. No.
They beat Spain? Come on.
There you go, Ross. Don't be silly.
easy answer.
Yeah. And Paul says, would international qualifiers be better played altogether when league ends instead of spread throughout the season? I think that's a resounding yes, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
No. David? Clear the game? No, I totally disagree.
You don't think all the qualifiers at the end of the season rather than breaking up?
No. What's the perennial sort of argument that why we don't do well at tournaments is because we're knackered basically at the end of it. So why would we do that to ourselves?
There's been a lot of complaints the last week about the structure of international qualifiers. But ahead of the next tournament, there's been the most incredibly sweeping changes that international football has seen in terms of this Euro Nations League, which is very, very complex and difficult to explain. But once you read it three times, it does seem to make a lot of sense. So there are steps being taken to improve the spectacle, and let's hope it works.
The Euro Nations League. Just for anyone who's saying...
We'll try and leave.
Well, how does that work?
It's really complex. I mean, I'm not sure we can adequately explain.
Michael is basically rubbing his knuckles against his forehead as we speak.
It kind of will take on... It will change the way we do qualifying, and we'll kind of introduce promotion and relegation between different levels.
Oh, really?
Which... And kind of this, gives everyone...
When is this coming in?
For Euro 2020.
So after the World Cup. So basically, we're going to get rid of the old qualifying groups for the Euros. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And is it going to be two-tiered qualifying?
Oh, no, many tiers. There'll be...
Particularly if you're an England fan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. I needed three reads of the Wikipedia page.
Speaking of internationals, anyway, let's just bring you up to speed on what has been happening in Europe and around the world over a busy week of qualifiers. As you probably know, Russia, Brazil, Mexico, Belgium, Iran and Japan were all qualified. Saudi Arabia and South Korea have now joined them from an Asia group, which is all sorted. And Saudi Arabia going through means that Australia, who of course are in Asia, now must face Syria in a playoff for the right to go to another playoff featuring a team from the American South... American Central American CONMEBOL,
which could be the US.
Could be the US, who they kept their hopes alive late with that equaliser against Honduras, but they need 4 to 6 points from their last two games, USA, so they're by no means guaranteed their place in Russia. But Syria are obviously getting loads of headlines, the commentator breaking down and that 93rd-minute equaliser away in Iran in a match which drew all sorts of controversy because they wouldn't let any female Iranian fans in, but they did let female Syrian fans through. So there's questions being asked in the Iranian parliament. We'll move on from that. Dan is South America. David, as you know, Brazil are through. Uruguay, Colombia, Peru, the other three currently looking for at automatic places. Chile, we mentioned this back in part one, currently missing out altogether, down in sixth place. Two-time winners Argentina are still in fifth and heading for that playoff with Anthony Hudson's New Zealand. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of have a playoff before a playoff in that I think their next game is against Peru, who are obviously above them, I think only on goal difference at the moment. But Argentina, despite having a wealth of attacking talent, so much so that they can leave Gonzalo Higuain at home, have only scored 16 goals in 16 games. I think they've gone 6 hours without scoring a goal from open play.
Well, their last match against the already eliminated Venezuela was in Buenos Aires. Even so, the only goal they scored was a second-half own goal from the Venezuelans.
Something we touched on earlier, I think it would be a great shame if Chile didn't qualify for this World Cup. I think there's a good argument that both 2010 and 2014, they were the most exciting, entertaining team at the competition. You know, international football is so slow and so dull and so defensive at the moment. And this was a team who pressed from the front, who had incredibly technically gifted players. They changed their formation to get players into space. They were just really entertaining. So it'd be a real shame if they weren't in Russia.
I think we touched upon this during the Confederations Cup. They haven't had a summer off for years because they're always playing World Cup, Confederation Cup, Copa America, etc. And
they might well get one this
time.
Maybe
they're due one.
Yeah, maybe they are. In Africa, no one's through yet. But I tell you who's not going is Cameroon, who got done, African champions Cameroon, got done 4-0 last week by Nigeria. Algeria also not qualified for Russia. Tunisia and Egypt looking good. Egypt, this will be their first World Cup appearance since 1990. It's a long time. In Europe, Belgium, the only European side that's definitely qualified. The group leaders right now are France, Switzerland, Germany, Serbia, Poland, England, Spain and Croatia. Although, David, Croatia's loss to Turkey on Tuesday means that Croatia and Turkey and Iceland and Ukraine are all within 2 points of each other. You watched Iceland's 2-0 win over Ukraine, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched a bit of it as well. Well deserved. And they've... The fact that they create such a good atmosphere at home in a stadium that isn't conducive to it. It's an athletic stadium with two stands basically, and they create such an atmosphere there. And there's 15 games unbeaten there, 15 competitive games unbeaten there, and it's phenomenal that they're in the position again where they are.
Well, they are, aren't they? All coming down to the next set of games in October. Gylfi Sigurdsson with a brace in that. A win there, which leaves it so very tight. The Dutch, who got hammered by the French, are now back in the mix. They're right behind Sweden, who they're going to be facing in next month's fixtures. This after Sweden lost 3-2 to Bulgaria. France looking good in that group, even though they only drew 0-0 against Luxembourg. Poland, who got beaten 4-0 by Denmark. They're 3 points ahead of Denmark. And Montenegro. Montenegro, in their final two games, have Denmark at home and then Poland away. So that's pretty wide open. Next month, Switzerland will be facing Portugal for top spot in their group. Potentially more interesting than this is what's happening with Wales and Ireland, do you think? Did you see Ireland's game with Serbia, Michael?
I saw Kolarov's goal.
Did you see? Yeah. I actually was watching this. It was Ireland were laying siege to the Serbia goal. And the curious thing was, I mean, they looked all over Serbia, I thought, David, until the Serbians scored, and then bizarrely Serbia seemed to have the run of play.
Yeah, and I thought Darren Randolph did extremely well to get out of the way of that shot. it was a hell of a strike, wasn't it?
Yeah, it almost took the crossbar down with it.
Problems continuing for Ireland in terms of actually scoring any goals at home. I think they've had two in their last four there at the Aviva Stadium, which is not good. While Serbia take a 4-point cushion in that group, Wales move up now to second place following their win in Moldova, a 2-0 victory, goals from Aaron Ramsey. And the first one was Robson Carney, wasn't it? With the assist from that fella, Ben Woodburn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Next month, Ireland face Wales. Boy, that's going to be a showdown, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is. All right, and that just leaves England and Scotland's group. As you probably know, England just need a point in their last two matches, Slovenia and Lithuania, the opponents. Scotland, Michael, what's happened with Scotland? Is this something that you have a view on? Last year, they looked done for, and so did Strachan. Since then, they picked up 10 points from 12. The only points they dropped were in the 2-2 draw with England. And now they're still in third, but they're only a point behind Slovakia, who they're going to be entertaining next in October.
Yeah, that's a really interesting game. I don't have any particular view. I was always slightly surprised by how much stick Strachan was getting. It's a relatively uninspiring group of players that I think he's kind of just squeezing a decent amount out from. But it'd be great to see them qualify. That game against Slovakia could be great.
Yeah, well, that would take them to potentially a playoff. We'll see. Who is guaranteed a second place in their group is Northern Ireland, of course. And they're looking pretty good in terms of the coefficient for a playoff spot, indeed, from second. This after beating the Czech Republic with only 28% possession. They had 28% possession. The Czechs had 72%, but didn't manage a single shot on goal. And indeed, when you look at Northern Ireland's defensive record, I mean, David, it's extraordinary, isn't it? 5 consecutive wins, 10 hours without conceding. They've had 7 clean sheets in 8 qualifiers. It's the best record in any of the European qualifying groups. And this is with Aaron Hughes and Johnny Evans as their kind of central defensive pairing.
Yeah, and it's I think it's testament to the manager as well, Michael O'Neill. And you wonder why he... I mean, Chris Coleman for Wales was always getting linked to jobs.
Is he?
Well, whenever one comes up, he tends to be lobbed in there. But you never hear anything about Michael O'Neill.
Yeah, Luke Dowling, formerly Watford sporting director, was expressing surprise equally that Michael O'Neill doesn't get more recognition.
Yeah, you're considering that they're the goalkeeper as well, you can't get a game at Norwich either.
Yeah, is he back up at Norwich, is he?
Yeah, Angus Gunn has gone from Manchester City on loan there, so he's been playing this season. And Mike McGovern, he had a wonderful Euros, and they've obviously created this kind of they've all played together. They've got this like a club mentality. It's a bit of a cliche, but they have done that, and they've especially defensively, it's been the main strength. And you think 10 points ahead of Czech Republic, it's just a great record for them to for them to have.
It is extraordinary. Especially, and a lot of people have mentioned this, coming off their Euros, some teams have found it hard to continue that momentum. And Wales certainly did to begin with.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. One last little topic, and it's Italy. Is Iniesta joining Juve?
Well, he's available for free at the end of this season. I think there's been actual whispers about this for longer than the last few weeks. I think this goes back to spring. I think Juve, of course, very aware of when players' deals are expiring. Iniesta is exactly the kind of profile of player that they want in terms of kind of skill, finesse, can hold the ball on the biggest stages in Europe. And Barcelona haven't tied him down, despite what they've said, because he's actually come out and said, no, I haven't signed a new deal yet, so you don't speak
for
me.
Seems to be a lot of that happening.
Yeah, it does, yeah, which I think, again, just goes to show the kind of level of dissent there is in the Barcelona dressing room, not towards the club, but towards the board that's currently in place.
Right.
I think one impact of such staggeringly high transfer fees is that probably more players will move on a free because it's just costing insane amounts to get them when they're under contract.
Yeah, yeah, fair point. Michael, what are you going to be watching this weekend?
Just very much looking forward to City against Liverpool.
Right, yeah. Okay. James, I know, I'm sure you've got a couple of tasty City A fixtures. As Lazio-Milan and on Saturday that Roma-Samp game.
Yeah, it'll be Milan's first big test under Vincenzo Montella because I think Lazio have shown that they're going nowhere, particularly with that performance against Juventus. By going nowhere, I mean that they're going to still be around the top.
A little bit ambiguous.
In Serie A. Yeah. It could be Schick's first game against his former club, Sampdoria. But there's also some great games around Europe this weekend. Atleti play against Valencia. We've seen Cholo Simeone sign a new deal this week until 2020 with Atleti. And also there's Bayern against Hoffenheim.
Catalan derby, if you want.
Catalan derby, yeah. So
Bayern-Hoffenheim, is it?
Yeah. Imagine if there was a show to round all these things up.
Yeah, well, I guess there is, isn't there? Just not on telly.
Yeah, it's true.
Catalan derby are particularly exciting in light of yesterday's news.
What's that?
There's going to be supposedly a binding referendum on Catalan independence next month.
Not really. Yeah. Wow. Okay. What's the margin for a successful vote? Just out of interest.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Not sure. Sorry.
Where are you heading? You're heading to the Emirates on Saturday, then.
Arsenal Bournemouth to watch Cech and Begovic.
Right. Okay.
And get my knives out.
Yes. Well, that's been a fascinating trawl through what's coming up and a little bit of what's gone. And we'll be back, of course, to do something similar on Monday. Many thanks to David Priest for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. James Horncastle.
Bon weekend.
Michael Cox.
Thank you very much.
And you listener. We, as I say, will be back on Monday with more Totally Football Show. So have yourselves a super weekend and we'll catch up with you then.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and tweet us @thetotallyshow.